More than 200 years before Christ, a Greek general named Pyrrhus defeated a Roman army at a cost of more than a third of his men. When he was congratulated for his victory over the Romans, he said, "Alas, one more such victory, and I am undone." He had won a victory, but at such a high cost that it wasn't worth it. His forces were substantially weakened. It wasn't possible for him to rebuild his army fast enough. The Romans immediately sent another army against him, and in the ensuing battle, his forces were destroyed, his empire was lost, and he was killed. His success at such a high cost had led to his ultimate defeat. His first victory became forever known as a Pyrrhic victory. In military strategy, the principle of the economy of force is central to success in warfare. This principle of economy requires the commander to choose the time and place for both primary and secondary efforts and to minimize the expenditure of resources in the attainment of secondary goals and objectives. Only by conserving resources can the commander assemble sufficient mass to achieve victory against the primary objectives, the most important ones. Operation Desert Storm in 1991 was a classic example of the application of the principle of the economy of force. By preceding the ground attack with intensive, laser-guided aerial bombardment, the Allies were able to knock out the complete command and control system of the Iraqi army. They were able to destroy hundreds of tanks and artillery pieces. They were able to almost eliminate the Iraqi army's ability to defend or counterattack effectively. And when the main force went in, the battle was over in 100 hours, with a total loss of less than 200 men from the Allied armies. In terms of economy, it was one of the best-fought and lowest-cost victories ever attained in warfare. In another example, the tank battle of Kursk in Russia in the summer of 1943 was the decisive battle of World War II, and also the largest single battle that took place. Both the Germans and the Russians threw in all of their tanks and armored vehicles to attack and counterattack in the Kursk salient. After days of fighting back and forth, the Germans were finally forced to withdraw with the loss of most of their armor. From that point onward, it was not possible for Germany to win the war. The Germans had suffered what are called absolute losses. These are losses that cannot be made up in time. The Russians had only suffered relative losses. They had sacrificed a large number of tanks and armored vehicles, but they were able to manufacture new ones to replace them and to continue their advance on the Eastern Front toward Berlin. These principles apply to you and to your work as well. The first principle of economics is that critical resources are scarce. There are never enough of them. There's never enough time, enough money, enough raw materials, enough of anything of great value. For this reason, economic goods have value. We call this the principle of supply and demand. Whenever there's a high demand and a limited supply, the value or cost of the goods increases. In selling, we know that the more desirable a product or service, the more the company can charge for it. On the other hand, the greater the competition for a product or service, and the greater the number of competitive offerings, the less that the producing company can charge for it in the marketplace. All of economics is aimed at increasing the level of outputs relative to inputs. In other words, you want to get more done and more out relative to the amount that you put in. The principle of economy applies to your life and your work in that the most successful people are those who are able to achieve the highest level of rewards at the lowest personal cost in time and money. And this must be your goal as well. Sometimes I offer to teach my audiences the basic principles of economics in less than 5 minutes. I have personally studied economics for more than 25 years, and I've concluded that economics revolves around 4 or 5 basic principles with a series of additional principles and commentaries added on. So my first question is this. If I could offer you $10,000 per year or $100,000 per year to do the same job, which would you choose? The answer is that almost everyone would choose to earn $100,000 per year rather than $10,000 for the same job. Well, this is normal and logical. All people prefer more to less all things being equal. Sometimes politicians and others claim that people are greedy. But people aren't greedy. They just prefer more to less. This is a normal and natural human response, and it has been true throughout all the history of man. The second question I then ask is, if you could receive this $100,000 on the 1st of January or the 31st of December of the same year, when would you like to receive it? Well, everyone usually answers that they'd prefer to receive it on January 1st rather than on December 31st. Of course, everyone prefers sooner to later. Given a choice, all things being equal, you will always prefer to have a benefit earlier rather than having to wait for it. Sometimes people are accused of being impatient and greedy or demanding with regard to getting the things that they want. But this isn't true. People just prefer more to less and sooner to later. The third question I ask to teach basic economics to my audiences is, if you could earn this $100,000 per year doing an easy job or a difficult job, which type of job would you prefer? As you might expect, everyone chooses the easier job over the harder job. This is again a normal category of human behavior and a basic principle of economics. Everybody prefers easier to harder when given a choice. Sometimes people are accused of being lazy. But people aren't lazy. They just prefer easier to harder, all things being equal. I then ask the final question in my economics lesson. If you could be absolutely guaranteed of this amount of money, or if your receiving this money was highly uncertain, which would you choose? And again, everyone chooses a high degree of certainty rather than a low degree of uncertainty. So what do we know about human activity in general and about economics in particular? Well, we know that people prefer more to less, sooner rather than later, easier rather than more difficult, and greater certainty rather than uncertainty. Every decision that you make with regard to any expenditure of time, money, or emotion takes these four factors into consideration. If you're in sales, every customer that you deal with is looking to get more, sooner, easier, and with greater certainty. In our competitive society, your ability to convince a customer that your product or service offers the very best choices and greatest opportunity to achieve these four factors, plus the specific benefits of what you sell, is the key to market success. There are two factors that determine the purchase of any product or service in a competitive marketplace. The first is what we have called time to market. If you can get to the market sooner than a competitor with a product or service that offers a benefit that people want and are willing to pay for, you can leapfrog your competitor and achieve a market advantage. Everyone prefers sooner to later, and the companies and individuals who do things quickly and produce products and services fast are always more respected and better rewarded than those who are slower. The second measure of economy in all business purchases, and many other purchases as well, is what is called time to payback. This refers to the period of time that the customer anticipates investing before he or she gets a return on their investment in the product or service that more than pays for that investment. In business, this is often called the internal rate of return. It is the percentage return that a person gets to their bottom line as a result of buying and using the product or service that you are selling. It can even refer to the pleasure or satisfaction a customer enjoys from using your product or service. For example, in business, when Xerox came out with their two-sided copying machines, they developed a sales presentation and economic analysis that enabled them to sell the machines thousands of dollars worth by the truckload. They simply demonstrated to a prospective customer that by copying on both sides of the sheet of paper, they could cut their mailing costs in half. The savings on mailing costs for a large company were actually greater than the entire cost of the photocopier. In fact, as soon as the company began using the two-sided copier, they would begin to make a profit or a return in excess of the total cost of the copier, paper, toner, and maintenance. Every purchaser wants to know, what's in it for me? In terms of economic advantage and bottom line benefit. Every purchaser wants to know how quickly he or she gets the return or the benefit that you promised. Every purchaser wants to know how certain it is that he or she gets that return. Your job as a professional salesperson or business person is to demonstrate to a prospective purchaser that he or she will get a return that is greater, sooner, easier, and more certain from using your product or service than he or she would get from using someone else's product or service or from doing nothing at all. Your job is to demonstrate that you sell free products to qualified purchasers. An internal rate of return is the amount of money that a company or purchaser makes back on the savings or benefits that he or she gains from what you sell. For example, if a company pays 12% to borrow money from the bank, and you can demonstrate that your product or service will pay for itself in 5 years, the equivalent of a 20% internal rate of return, then what you are selling is actually a profit maker for the customer. Your product turns out to be free over time. The only question that the customer will have is, how certain can I be that your promises and projections will be achieved? The principle of economy applies to every area of your life. The reason why individuals and organizations want more, sooner, easier, and with greater certainty is because consciously or unconsciously, they recognize that life is precious and resources are scarce. You cannot do everything you want to do, nor can you acquire everything you want to acquire. You have to choose. And you always have to choose what you think is going to give you the very highest and best return in terms of satisfaction, both in the short term and in the long term. With regard to your career, the average annual income in America today is about $25,000 per year for an individual and about $35,000 for a family. Your first job when you begin your career is to meet the averages. Your second job is to beat the averages by as great a margin as possible. Some people, over the course of their lifetimes, will see their income increase by 3 to 5% per year, just at or slightly ahead of the rate of inflation or cost of living increases. After 20 or 30 or 40 years of hard work, the average person will be earning the average income. Of course, as you become more knowledgeable and more experienced at your work, you'll become more valuable to your company, and you'll probably receive more than a new person starting out. However, this is not always the case. An engineer graduating from university today already knows about 80% of the material of an engineer who graduated 10 years ago. But the new engineer will work for half the price. If a person graduates in engineering and in many other fields and does not continually upgrade his or her skills and abilities, he or she will quickly be replaced by a new graduate engineer who will work for far less and contribute almost as much. In a well-publicized case recently, an older executive was laid off by a major corporation and replaced by a younger executive who was earning far less. The older executive sued for age discrimination. The court, however, ruled that it was not discrimination if the company could hire a younger person who could do the same job at a lower cost. The court ruled that this was simple, basic economics upon which our entire free market system is built. The problem was that the older executive had been coasting for several years. He had stopped upgrading his skills and abilities, so the value of his contribution was no greater than the contribution of a person 10 or 20 years younger. This is a phenomenon that we are seeing throughout our competitive market society. A job is an opportunity for you to make a contribution to your company that is substantially greater than the amount your company has to pay you to do the job. As long as your contribution is greater than your cost, the company can afford to keep you on. But if you allow the value of your contribution to level off or decline because you don't keep your skills and knowledge up to date, you'll soon be replaced by someone who is more ambitious and more aggressive and who is willing to make an equal or greater contribution for a lower salary. When you go into the marketplace as a customer, you always seek to get the very most for the very least. You want the highest quality and quantity of products and services at the lowest possible cost. In the world of work, as it is, each person views their own work as something unique and special in the entire universe. They view themselves and their activities as something that is different and apart from all other people and all other workers. However, in the marketplace, the labor of another person is merely a factor of production. And like any other factor of production, companies that hire people are always looking to get the very most for the very least, or lowest cost. All things being equal, the company would soon go out of business if it paid more for an employee than it had to. Your job is to make sure that you are worth the kind of money that you want to earn. This is the best economy of all. Not long ago, the then Secretary of Labor, Robert Reich, proclaimed that America must create more high-paying jobs for its workforce. This is an interesting statement. What part of America is supposed to create these high-paying jobs? Is it the trees, or the mountains, or the lakes, or the rivers? Is it some specific individual or group of individuals that's responsible for creating these high-paying jobs? A better question is really this. Where do high-paying jobs come from? Who really creates a high-paying job? When you think about it, you realize that high-paying jobs are created by individuals who make themselves highly productive. It's impossible for anyone outside the individual to create a high-paying job. Only the individual, by constantly working on himself or herself, by constantly upgrading his or her skills and abilities, can make himself or herself highly productive and therefore valuable and highly paid in a competitive marketplace. There is no other way. We said earlier that the aim of all strategic planning and strategic thinking in business is to increase the return on equity. Well, your equity is personal. It is mental, emotional, and intellectual. Your job in your life is to increase your return on personal equity, or return on energy. To put it another way, your job is to get the highest possible return on life. If you want to earn $50,000 per year, and you have a choice of achieving that income goal in 5 years or 10 years, which would you choose? The answer is obvious. All things being equal, you would prefer to reach the $50,000 mark in 5 years rather than 10 years. Well then, the only question is, how? The first thing we know is that people who are earning vastly more than the average are not necessarily smarter or more talented, but they are doing different things than the average person is doing. And if you do these same things, you'll begin to move ahead more rapidly toward your financial goals and objectives as well. Today, time and knowledge are the primary sources of value. Your ability to achieve a result, either for yourself or for someone else, faster than another person, represents real value in your life and will ultimately be reflected in the amount you earn. Your ability to use your time effectively to get more done, faster, easier, and with greater certainty for yourself and others is the key to economizing on the amount of time and life that you spend or invest to achieve your major objectives. There are several things that you can do to accelerate your progress in your life and your career. Each one of these has proven to be critical in the achievement of great success. By systematically implementing one or more of these concepts into your life, you can put your foot on the accelerator of your own career and move ahead more rapidly than perhaps you ever thought possible. The first accelerator is education. We live in a knowledge-based society where the highest-paid people are those who know more than the average person. They know more of the critical facts, ideas, and information than the average person in their field. As a result, they can make a more valuable contribution in a knowledge-based society. They are valued more, respected more, and ultimately paid more money and promoted more often. We'll talk about the central importance of continuous learning more extensively in the session on security. But the most important thing you need to remember now is that education and knowledge save time, energy, effort, expenditure, and resources. The more knowledgeable you are in a particular area, the faster, easier, and more certain it is that you can get the results that are necessary or expected in that area. The rule is that to earn more, you must learn more. If you want to increase your level of income, you must increase your level of intellectual capital and thereby the value of the knowledge component in what you are doing. The second accelerator that you can use to achieve your goals faster and easier is simply skill. Your level of ability in your field will determine the quality and quantity of your results. The better you get at what you do, the faster and easier it is for you to get a particular level of results. In business and personal life, there is a factor called the experience curve. This experience curve is absolutely essential for achieving great success. Experience curve theory says that whenever you begin a new task or undertaking, it takes tremendous time and effort to get any results at all. When you begin your sales career, for example, it may take you 30, 60, or 90 days to make your first sale. During that time, you may have to call on dozens of people and make dozens of presentations. But after you make your first sale, your second sale takes considerably less time and energy. It's still difficult and challenging, but nowhere near as hard as your first transaction. The reason is that even though you were unsuccessful for weeks when you began selling, you were learning at a rapid rate. You were becoming more and more knowledgeable about what it is you sold and what it is that customers wanted and how you could best combine the two. By the time you make your first sale, your knowledge has already reached a critical mass that you may not even be aware of. As you increase your skill through study and experience, you get better and better at doing the small things that increase the speed and predictability of your results. You become more fluent on the telephone. You become more competent at dealing with people face to face. You become more aware of and sensitive to people's real needs and concerns. You become more skilled at presenting your products or services and answering the questions or concerns that the customer might have. You become very focused in terms of getting your customers to take action and to proceed with your offering. Afterwards, you become more and more confident at getting both resales and referrals from your satisfied customers. If you're in business, the more you study and practice the essential skills of planning, organizing, staffing, delegating, supervising, measuring, and reporting, the better you get at each one of them. As a result, it takes you less and less time to get more and better results. You're able to achieve an even greater level of outputs with an ever-decreasing level of inputs. You move down on the experience curve. It's like physical fitness. If you haven't worked out for a while, when you begin, your body will be stiff and sore, and you'll be exhausted afterwards. But the more you work out physically, the easier it becomes for you to work out longer and longer and get better and better results. When you work out mentally, it's the same. The more you use your mind and develop your skills so that you can get better and better results for yourself and others, the less time it takes you to do it and the more you receive. Developing your skills and abilities is like climbing a ladder. You cannot skip steps without slipping and falling. You have to take it one step at a time. But you can increase your frequency of activity and thereby increase the speed at which you learn the things you need to know to achieve the goals you want to achieve. Bear Bryant, the University of Alabama football coach, once said that it is not the will to win that counts, but the will to prepare to win that makes all the difference. He said that everyone has the will or the desire to win, but very few people have the will to put in the long, hard hours of preparation that are necessary to win in competition. The third way you can accelerate your career is by developing an ever-widening circle of contacts. You'll find that every major change in your life is accompanied by a person or persons who either opens or closes doors for you. Everything is people. Your success will be determined by the number of people who know you and like you and who are willing to help you. In order to broaden your network of contacts, you must network continually at every opportunity. You must join your professional associations and get involved working with the other people in your field. you must attend social and business functions and introduce yourself to other people. There seems to be a direct relationship between the number of people you know and how successful you are. The reason for this is simple. People will always prefer to buy from or to recommend people that they know in some way rather than complete strangers. There seems to be a higher degree of certainty in making the right choice or recommendation if you're familiar with someone rather than if you don't know the person at all. For example, if you call in a new customer and you mention that you know a friend of his, the new customer will be far more open to listening to you and talking to you than if you walked in completely cold. A single introduction or contact can dramatically smooth the way to ever higher levels of success. My friend Charlie Jones says that you will be in 1 year where you are today, except for the people you meet and the books you read. Take every opportunity to expand your contacts, to meet new people, to give them your business card, and then to follow up your meetings with a letter or note offering them your services. You will be amazed at the cumulative effect of this strategy over time. A fourth accelerator, and one of the most important of all, is money. Having money in the bank gives you greater freedom and the ability to take advantage of opportunities when they come along. We'll talk about this more extensively in the next session. But the most important point is this. If you're broke or in debt, you have very few options open to you. One of the most important things I ever learned in life is that you are only as free as your options. If you have no options, you have no freedom. If you are stuck in a dead-end job that you cannot leave because you have no money set aside, you have put a brake on your potential. You are locked in place. You can end up spinning your wheels and losing months and years of your time by the very fact that you have no choice but to accept whatever is being handed to you. W. Clement Stone, who started as a 12-year-old paperboy and is now worth almost $1 billion, once wrote, "If you cannot save money, the seeds of greatness are not in you, because you can't get free." Another accelerator that enables you to get far more done in a shorter period of time is simply good work habits. Your ability to increase your ROTI, or return on time invested, can enable you to accomplish vastly more in a shorter period of time than another person who is disorganized and sloppy. The basic formula for high performance is E times E equals R, or effectiveness times efficiency equals results. Effectiveness means doing the right things. Effectiveness requires that you analyze your work carefully, set priorities, and always focused on the highest value use of your time. Efficiency means doing things right. Efficiency requires that you do your work in the fastest and most accurate way possible to guard against the necessity of redoing the work again later. Developing good work habits requires that you think before acting. You make a list and set priorities on the list before you begin. Good work habits requires that you consider the likely consequences, positive or negative, of what you're doing. Good work habits require that you continually ask, "What is the most valuable use of my time right now?" Another way to accelerate your career, to reduce the amount of time and energy that it takes to achieve your goals, is by developing a positive mental attitude. A positive mental attitude is very much a decision that you make. Irrespective of your previous experiences or your background, you can become more positive by practicing many of the things that we've talked about in this program. Remember, you become what you do. If you engage in the same activities that positive, confident, optimistic people engage in, you will eventually become one of them. A positive mental attitude has best been defined as a positive response to stress. Your life will be a continuous series of ups and downs, successes and failures, triumphs and disappointments. Anyone can remain positive when things are going well. It's your ability to look for the good in every situation that you see that makes you positive. It's your determination to focus on the solutions rather than on the problems that keeps you optimistic. It's your decision to be future-oriented and opportunity-oriented rather than past and blame-oriented, that keeps you in control of your own mind and keeps you looking for the benefits and advantages in every situation. Another accelerator you can incorporate into your lifestyle, and one that can help you more than you can imagine, is the development of a positive image. People judge you by the way you look on the outside, by the way you appear. The fact is that you judge everyone else by the way they look on the outside as well. Taking time to present an attractive image in your person, your clothing, your grooming, and your accessories can have an inordinate impact on the doors that open for you and the people who are willing to help you and bring you along. According to the research, people pass judgment on you in the first 4 seconds, and they finalize or firm up their judgment on you in the first 30 seconds. People take one glance at you and come to a conclusion about who you really are. From that point on, the human mind is constructed in such a way that it attempts to justify what it has already decided to believe. If a person's first glance at you gives them a positive impression, they tend to see you, hear you, and relate to you in a positive way thereafter. If a person's first glance at you gives them a negative impression, they tend to see and hear you in a negative way from that point forward. Get a book, take a course, visit a consultant, and do everything that you possibly can to learn how to present the very best image possible in everything that you do. Dress for success. Don't listen to people who tell you that you can dress any way you want today in our new casual society. Only people who have a limited future or no future at all are indifferent to the way they appear to others in a competitive situation. Creativity is another wonderful way to accelerate your career and increase the speed at which you achieve your goals. Creativity is something that requires that you continually look for newer, better, faster, cheaper ways to get the job done. Remember, one good idea is all you need to start a fortune. Perhaps the most important factor in accelerating your career is your character. Self-discipline combined with honesty will open countless doors to you. Trust is the foundation of all relationships. When people know you and believe in you and are convinced that they can trust you to keep your word and to do what you say you will do, they will feel that they're far more likely to get the things they want through you, to get the things they want faster, sooner, easier, and with greater certainty. Economy in military terms means never spending more men and materiel necessary to achieve a particular objective. Economy in your personal life means organizing your activities so that you achieve more and more of the things you want and need at a lower and lower cost in terms of time and energy. Economy requires that you continually think about how you can get the highest and best return on your investment of time, money, and emotion in the things you do. Economy requires that you see yourself as a valuable and unique person whose life is extremely precious. You never spend more of this wonderful life than you need to get the things that matter the most to you. Your goals in life are to be successful, happy, healthy, and prosperous. Your goals are to fulfill your full potential and become everything that you're capable of becoming. Your goal is not just to survive, but to live, and to live a great life. And one of the most important principles to assure all of these is the principle of security. In military terms, the principle of security requires that you never permit the enemy to acquire an unexpected advantage. Proper security requires that a commander prevents the surprise of his own forces, maintains his freedom of action, avoids interruption or sudden counterattack by the enemy, and maintains his position. Application of the principle of security does not imply undue caution and the avoidance of calculated risk. Security can often be enhanced by the seizure and the retention of the initiative. In other words, sometimes the very best defense is a good offense. Sometimes the very best way to assure your own security is to be aggressively moving ahead, attacking, taking and retaining the initiative, making specific decisions, and taking particular actions to assure that you get and keep the things you want. Back in history, in 1759, France and the French armies were in control of Quebec, supported by the Fortress of Quebec on a promontory overlooking the St. Lawrence River. The position was virtually unassailable by land. As long as the French held the fort, the British could not achieve their desired domination of Canada. The only part of the fort and the Plains of Abraham in front of the fort that was undefended was the high cliff overlooking the river. It was considered to be unassailable and unapproachable. However, an Indian scout with the British Army came to the commanding general, James Wolfe, and told him of a little-known path that led up the cliffs to the plain before the fort. That night, the entire British Army, one man at a time, climbed the narrow path and emerged in front of the fort. When the sun rose the next morning, the British Army was ready for the assault. The French general, Montcalm, led his French soldiers out of the fort to give battle. A fierce 10-minute battle took place on September 13th, during which both generals Wolfe and Montcalm were killed and the French army was defeated. This battle and the victory by the British, brought about by a single breach in the security of the French position, brought to an end the dreams of a French empire in the New World. The Battle of Waterloo, fought on June 18, 1815, was perhaps the most important and decisive battle fought on the European continent in that century. Because of Napoleon's more than 20 years of brilliant military successes, Wellington was the underdog going into the battle. The fate and future of the French Empire, the Prussian Empire, the Austrian Empire, and the British position in Europe all hung in the balance. The stakes were extremely high. But even knowing this, with the odds against him, Wellington took 17,000 badly needed troops out of his main army and posted them as a reserve on the road to Brussels, just in case he was defeated on the battlefield. Wellington knew that without a reserve, if his army was overwhelmed by the French, it could be destroyed as a fighting force and be incapable of regrouping and fighting again later. On the other hand, the French committed all of their troops at the Battle of Waterloo. When the battle turned against them with the arrival of the Prussian troops to support Wellington at the end of the day, the French had no reserves. As a result, the French army was destroyed as a fighting force, and France was never again a major military power in Europe. Putting aside reserves, providing for security always requires both thought and sacrifice. Some immediate advantage must be given up in order to assure longer-term success and survival. The best leaders are always those who take nothing for granted. No matter how successful they are, they never stop watching and taking the necessary steps to guard against a reversal from an unexpected direction. The failure of General Joseph Hooker to defend his right flank at the Battle of Chancellorsville led to one of the most stunning defeats of a superior force in the Civil War. The failure of a company to guard against the loss of a major customer can lead to a stunning reversal of fortune as well. All of life is a series of trade-offs. The most successful people trade short-term pain for long-term gain. They're willing to sacrifice in the short term in order to enjoy greater and more certain benefits in the long term. They're willing to pay the price of success in advance and to put off the enjoyment of immediate rewards and benefits to assure that even greater rewards and benefits will be available later. The principle of security in business requires that you always ask yourself, what is the worst possible thing that could happen in this situation? If there are several things that could go wrong, you ask, of all the things that could go wrong, what is the worst possible thing that could go wrong? All great leaders practice crisis anticipation on a regular basis. They're continually thinking about the future. They're continually looking down the road and assessing the potential things that could go wrong and what they could do to assure that those things do not happen. Your ability to achieve and maintain security for yourself and for the people who depend on you is a key leadership quality. It's an extremely important way of thinking and a guarantor against setbacks and disappointments that can be very costly. General George S. Patton, Jr. was absolutely adamant about not paying for the same ground twice. He insisted that once his troops had taken a particular objective, that they secured the objective so soundly that it could not be retaken by German counterattack. Patton was absolutely adamant that whatever it cost to obtain an objective, they would not have to pay that cost in men and materiel again because of a failure to take the necessary precautions. In business, we identify our most important products and services and the competitive advantages that we have in those products and services over our competitors. The very best business people are adamant about maintaining their advantages in the marketplace by continuously upgrading the quality of their products and services so that their competitors cannot get ahead of them. One of the reasons why the very best companies spend an enormous amount of time on the research and development of new products and processes and on the upgrading of their management information systems is so that they can stay ahead of their rivals. A vital area of security in modern business is securing your main customers in every way possible. Once you've achieved a breakthrough and captured a customer, you must do everything possible to assure that you keep that customer indefinitely. It costs you 10 to 15 times as much to get a new customer as it costs you to keep an existing customer. Repeat sales from your existing customers have the lowest cost of acquisition and therefore represent the highest profit per sale of any business that you do. As a sales professional, you do everything possible to secure against the loss or disloyalty of your best customers. You know that the natural tendency in all relationships is toward entropy. Entropy refers to the running down of energy or taking your customers for granted. Many individuals and organizations will spend an enormous amount of time and energy to get a customer for the first time, but then they'll spend less and less time and energy to keep that customer. A good rule is that a full third of the money that you spend in advertising and promoting your products and services should be aimed at your most recent customers. They are the ones who are the most likely to buy again and to tell their friends. There are always two groups of customers in your marketplace. There are the customers who know you and like you and have bought from you in the past and who are satisfied with the way you take care of them. These are the ones who buy from you again and who refer your friends to you. These are the lowest cost, lowest maintenance, highest profit customers you can have. The second category of customers in your marketplace are the people who have never heard of you before and have no idea or knowledge of what you do. The mistake that many companies make is that they focus all of their advertising and sales efforts on those customers who couldn't care less about them rather than aiming their efforts at those customers who already know and like them. In asking yourself, what is the worst possible thing that could happen? Think about your customers. What would happen if you were to lose your main customers? What kind of an impact would it have on your sales, your income, and your business? And if the loss of one of your major customers represents a serious danger to you, what steps could you take immediately to assure that you don't lose that customer in the first place? Remember, business is similar to warfare in that the stakes are very high. Victory and defeat are always possible. Your competition is determined to win your customers and to win the revenues and profits that go along with them. Your competition never sleeps. Your counterparts at competing organizations are thinking day and night about how they can outmaneuver you to get at your customers, to take them away, and to keep them for the indefinite future. You must be thinking the same way as well. In business, the only real security you can ever have is your ability to serve your customers better than your competitors. In its simplest terms, your security comes from your ability to find out exactly what it is your customers want and are willing to pay for, and then to give it to them faster and better than your competitors possibly could. The most valuable asset of any company is how it is known to its customers, its reputation in the marketplace. The most valuable asset your company has is contained in the way its customers think about and talk about your company when you're not there. Your company's reputation, what people say about your company to other customers and prospects, is the most important single determinant of how secure your company's position is in today's marketplace. The very best companies invest a good deal of time and effort in their advertising, promotion, and public relations to assure that customers in the marketplace think highly of the company whenever they think about the products or services that the company sells. In a recent public opinion survey, shoppers in Phoenix, Arizona were asked their opinions of the top department stores. Which department store did they think offered the very best combination of quality and service to its customers? What was not surprising was that Nordstrom stores won 57% of the votes in the customer survey. 57% of shoppers in Phoenix rated Nordstrom above all other stores for its quality and service. What was surprising, however, was that in Phoenix, Arizona, there is no Nordstrom store. Nonetheless, the reputation of Nordstrom's for quality products and service was so great that customers who did not even shop at Nordstrom's rated it above the stores that they did patronize on a regular basis. This is the kind of reputation that translates into extraordinary success in the marketplace. What is your most valuable asset in business, as an individual? And the answer is that it is your reputation as well. The way people think about you and talk about you is the most important single determinant of how successful you are in the marketplace. All the most successful business people and salespeople are thought of and talked of extremely highly by other people when they're not present. What do people think about and say about you in your absence? Your ability to influence and shape people's perceptions of you in a positive way is a key to the security of your position and your income in today's marketplace. The need for security is one of the deepest and most profound needs of all human beings. Abraham Maslow, the psychologist, in his Hierarchy of Needs, concluded that the need for security, financial, emotional, physical, was so important that when a person is threatened by the withdrawal or loss of security, he or she starts thinking of nothing else. For example, you could be going merrily along in your life, and then you come into work one morning and someone tells you that they are laying off 50% of the staff, and no one knows which 50% it will be. Suddenly, your financial security is threatened. Suddenly, from not thinking about it at all, you will think and talk about nothing else. Until the decision is made, you will be totally preoccupied with this threat to your security. Or you could be enjoying your life and then go for a regular medical checkup. Your doctor could come back and tell you that there is something in the tests that looks suspicious and that an exploratory surgery will be necessary to find out if there's anything to worry about. Suddenly, with your physical health threatened, you'll become totally preoccupied with what the medical test might indicate. This threat to your physical security and well-being will become overwhelmingly important, and you'll think and talk about nothing else until you know one way or another. If one of your goals in life is to be happy and content, it's absolutely essential that you organize your life to achieve the highest possible levels of security in every part of your life that is really important to you. You must consciously and deliberately invest time and resources into the building and development of a wall of security around the key parts of your life that are critical to your long-term health. Abraham Lincoln once said, "The only security you can ever have is the ability to do your job uncommonly well." We are rapidly moving out of the age of the job and into the age of the independent contractor. To be a big success, you must see yourself as self-employed, as the president of your own personal services corporation. In doing this, you imagine that you are selling your services on a daily basis, as a consultant would do to your current employer. Your employer is then evaluating your contributions on a daily basis to determine whether or not to keep you on for an additional day or week. When you begin looking on every hour as an hour that has to count, in terms of unique added value to your employer, you will find yourself using your time much better and doing your job much better as well. You know the motto for success at work: get good, get better, be the best. Make yourself valuable, then indispensable. In a competitive market, you most often achieve your security by daring to go forward, by seizing the initiative, by going onto the offensive. You achieve your economic and financial security by aggressively upgrading your knowledge and skills on a regular basis so that you get ahead of your competitors. The winning edge theory of success says that small differences in ability translate into large differences in results. What are the things that you do where small increases in your ability can translate into enormous differences in the results you get and the contribution you make? What are your areas of weakness, and how can you bring them up? Sometimes I ask my audiences if there are any people present who consider themselves to be know-it-alls. Naturally, no one raises their hands. No one thinks about themselves as a know-it-all. I then point out that there are two types of know-it-alls. The first is the conscious know-it-all, the person who is consciously convinced that they know everything they need to know about a particular subject, and so they have no desire or no interest in learning anything more. The second is the most dangerous kind. This is the unconscious know-it-all. This is the person who has unconsciously decided, often without being aware of it, that he or she already knows everything that he or she already needs to know about their particular field. This is the person who has stopped learning and growing aggressively in what they do. This is the person who has become complacent at usually a medium or low level of performance. Often we call this person the unconscious incompetent. This is the person who does not know and does not know that he does not know. This is the most tragic case of all, because this person cannot be helped. It is only when a person does not know and is aware that he does not know that he becomes open to new information and ideas. Don't be a know-it-all. The finest experts and the greatest authorities I've ever known in every field consider themselves to be students of their crafts. They never relax. They're eternally curious and inquisitive. They're constantly reading and searching out new information, ideas, and insights on what they do. They know that they can never know too much, and they take both themselves and their profession seriously enough so that they never stop learning. Perhaps the most important part of security in your personal life is your ability to attain and keep your own financial security. Throughout all of human history, financial security has been a major driving force of every adult. And the reason is simple. We all want to reach the point where we don't have to worry about money. We want to be able to order in the restaurant without looking at the right-hand column to see how hungry we are. We want to get far enough ahead so that no matter what else happens in our lives, we are financially secure and we can relax. The only way to achieve financial security during your working lifetime is for you to become extremely good at what you do and thereby become extremely well paid. And you know that small differences in performance can translate into enormous differences in rewards. Your job is to read the books, take the courses, and listen to the audio programs. Your job is to get better and better so that you join the top 10% of money earners in your field, whatever your field may be. And to attain long-term financial security, you must save your money. You must set a goal, make a plan, and work on your plan day in and day out, month in and month out, year in and year out, until you have finally built a financial fortress around your life such that you never have to worry about money again. The good news is that it has never been more possible for you to achieve financial independence in all of human history than it is today. There are more opportunities for you to increase your income and to accumulate financial reserves today than ever existed before. And there are no limits except the limits that you accept and place on your own mind. In the year 1900, there were approximately 5,000 millionaires in America, most of them self-made. In fact, America is the land of self-made millionaires. Virtually everyone who is financially successful today started out with nothing and made it all themselves. By 1950, 50 years later, there were 100,000 millionaires in America, again, most of them self-made. This is a growth of 20 times in 50 years. By 1980, 30 years later, there were 1,800,000 millionaires in America. Fully 80% of these millionaires had started with nothing when they left school. This was a growth rate from 1950 to 1980, 30 years, of 18 times the number of wealthy people produced by our economic system. In 1996, the number had jumped to 3,700,000 millionaires, more than double the number of 16 years before. Experts predict today that the number of millionaires in America will double again in the next 10 years. Today, somewhere in America, someone becomes a new millionaire every 4.5 minutes, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and the rate is increasing. And for every millionaire, there are others who are achieving net worths in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. On the other side of the equation, there are people who are now worth $10 million, $100 million, $1 billion, and even many, many billions of dollars, most of them self-made, starting from little or nothing earlier in life. The richest man in America, and perhaps the world, for example, is Bill Gates, who started with nothing but ideas and ambition when he dropped out of Harvard at the age of 20 and jumped into the computer software business. The rules for achieving financial independence and financial security are simple. First, spend less than you earn, and then save or invest the difference. If you can do this, you can achieve all your financial goals. But if you cannot discipline yourself to spend less than you earn, you will find yourself worrying about money all the days of your life and probably retiring broke or dependent upon Social Security. The rule for financial independence has always been the same. It is that 10% of every dollar is yours to keep. Your goal must be to save at least 10% of your income and preferably 15 or 20% over the course of your working lifetime. The key to financial independence is compound interest. If you were to save $100 per month from the age of 20 to the age of 65, and that $100 per month were to grow at a compound rate of 10% per annum, which is reasonably conservative, you'd be worth well over $1 million when you retired. Compound interest starts off very slowly at the beginning, but then it begins to grow with the force of an avalanche moving down a mountain. For example, if you took a penny and you doubled it every day for 30 days, that's 2 cents, 4 cents, 8 cents, 16 cents, and so on, it would be worth millions of dollars at the end of a month. But if you took a penny and you doubled it every day, and then, after 10 days, you just took the money and spent it, it would only be worth a few dollars. And, unfortunately, this is what most people do. All serious money is patient money. All serious money is based on long-time perspective. Men and women who achieve financial independence are those who think long-term, and who are willing to make sacrifices in the short term in order to make their financial dreams come true. In Thomas Stanley's recent study of self-made millionaires, summarized in his book, The Millionaire Next Door, he again repeats his finding that the key difference between men and women who achieve financial independence and those who do not is that the financially successful prefer financial independence to status and current consumption. In other words, financial independence comes about as a result of your being cheap and frugal in everything you do as you accumulate your financial resources. Self-made millionaires prefer the pleasure of having money in the bank to the pleasure of having a good time as they go along. They never buy when they can lease. They never lease when they can rent. They never rent when they can borrow. And they never buy it new when they can get it used. One of the measures of how well you are doing financially comes out of interviews with self-made millionaires. When asked about how they measure their financial success, they invariably refer to their run rate. Your run rate is defined as the number of years that you could support your current standard of living without having to work. Truly successful people have a run rate that extends beyond their expected lifetimes. In other words, they could stop working today, and they could enjoy their current standard of living for the rest of their lives with the amounts that they've put away. Here's a good question for you. What is your run rate? How long could you go without working, subsisting entirely on your existing savings and investments? Well, fully 70% of adults today have no run rate at all. The great majority of working adults are only 2 paychecks away from homelessness. Many people who have high incomes have no savings at all. And even worse, they have high levels of indebtedness that they have to service every single month. A friend of mine, the head of a large accounting firm, does the bookkeeping and tax preparation for a large number of very wealthy people. He told me that he had noticed something that they all seem to have in common. They all seem to have very low levels of debt. They have their money very carefully diversified and invested in a variety of different areas. They don't spend extravagantly on yachts, vacation homes, private planes, luxury goods, or other trappings of wealth. Instead, they stay close to the ground. They live in nice neighborhoods, but not overly expensive. Most self-made millionaires in America today appear to be just average people on the outside. They don't display their wealth in any way. Even their children don't know how much money they're worth. They never talk about it or show it off. They are not concerned about status at all. Many people have savings accounts, but people who become wealthy and people who don't have different attitudes toward their savings accounts. People who become wealthy save their money, but they never touch it or spend it on current expenditures. People who don't become wealthy may save their money as well, but they're always looking for opportunities to buy something with the money they've put away. The rule is that once you've begun accumulating money to build your financial fortress and increase your run rate, you never touch the money for any reason. If you want to save money for a car or a motorhome or a trip, you open up a separate account and you put money into that account for that reason. But your financial fortress account is where you put away your money and you never ever think of spending it for anything but long-term investment that will become bricks in the financial fortress that you're determined to construct around yourself. The rules of money and investment have never changed. First of all, money goes and stays where it is appreciated. Here's a simple test for you. Look at the money that you have in your pocket, your wallet, or your purse. Is it neatly organized, or is it all mixed up? Are your various bills organized by denomination with each of the heads facing in the same direction, or are your bills like a wad of rumpled paper with no rhyme or reason? Look at your checkbook. Is it carefully organized and properly balanced on an ongoing basis, or is it hopelessly confused? Financially successful people are meticulously careful about their money. They think about it, and they plan it carefully. They know exactly how much they have, and they have it properly organized. They spend about 10 to 20 hours per month thinking about and planning their finances carefully. They take nothing for granted. They are not casual about something that is as important to their security as their financial condition. Unsuccessful people, on the other hand, are confused and uncertain about how much money they actually have, how much things cost, how much they're paying, and how much they are worth. As a result of this confusion in their financial lives, they have a continuous feeling of insecurity and uncertainty about their money, which is probably well-deserved. Make a decision today to get all of your financial affairs in order. Imagine that you were going to pass away tomorrow morning and that someone was going to have to come in and sort out your finances quickly and efficiently for your family and friends. Organize your finances in such a way that they are all summarized and correct and every detail is properly organized so that a third party could understand your situation immediately. For most people, it's usually not possible for them to begin saving 10% of their income off the top. Most people's financial lives are in a state of some confusion. They have more month at the end of the money than they have money at the end of the month. They are in a constant state of juggling bills and credit card payments. Last year, fully 1.2 million people declared personal bankruptcy, almost all of them because of credit card debt, as a result of allowing their spending to get completely out of control. So, if you cannot save 10% of your income, save 1%. Once you get comfortable saving 1% off the top of every paycheck, start saving 2%. Within a year or two, you will be up to 10% or 15%. In 3 to 5 years, you will have a substantial sum of money put away. And the law of attraction applies to money. Money attracts money. The more you save and accumulate, the more money you will save and accumulate. The better you become at managing your finances, the more finances you will have to manage. The more responsible you become with regard to your money, the more money you will have to be responsible about. This rule never varies. Spend as much time analyzing an investment as you spend earning the money. Investigate before you invest. Study every detail of the business. Never invest in anything that you do not thoroughly understand and agree with. Self-made millionaires don't gamble, don't speculate, and don't take chances. They do not lose money. Self-made millionaires would rather keep the money in the bank at interest rather than take a chance at losing it. They have worked too hard to accumulate it in the first place. To achieve financial security, invest with experts who have proven success records. Don't invest in other people's ideas or other people's businesses where there is no track record of success. Remember, 99% of all entrepreneurial ventures, especially other people's entrepreneurial ventures, eventually fail, taking all the money with it. One of the keys to happiness, health, and long life is for you to achieve your own financial security. This comes from becoming very good at what you do and getting paid very well for it. You then save 10%, 15%, and eventually 20% of your income out of every paycheck. You put it away and never touch it, except to invest it carefully with experts having proven success records. You put off status symbols in the short term so that you can enjoy real wealth in the long term. You concentrate on building your savings and investments so that you ultimately achieve a run rate of 15 or 20 years when you retire. Once you've built your financial fortress, and this requires tremendous discipline and willpower on your part, you'll become one of the most positive, healthiest, and happiest people in your social circle. You will have broken through perhaps the biggest success barrier of all.
If you enjoyed this program from Master Motivator and Success Coach Brian Tracy, you are probably the type of high achiever that would benefit from Brian Tracy's personal success coaching program. This one-on-one coaching program is unlike any self-development tool ever offered. Imagine spending 12 weeks with your own coach who has been personally trained by Brian Tracy. Your coach will aid you on building your life strategies, guiding you as you take action steps toward making your greatest desires a reality. If you are like many, you often set goals, but sometimes lack the motivation to carry them through. With the ongoing nurturing and guidance of your personal coach and this outstanding program, you will be accountable for the changes you want to make in your life, and you'll soon see those changes becoming a reality. Created exclusively for Nightingale Connett by Brian Tracy, this program has had massive life-changing results on those that have committed themselves to it. It consists of a minimum of 12 weeks of 30-minute one-on-one telecoaching sessions with a trained personal coach. Accompanying the program are 12 cassette tapes, one for each week of study, along with a guidebook. This extraordinary program focuses on every aspect of your life and helps to integrate and balance your life success skills along with your business growth. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program offers you guidance in the areas of strategic planning, intelligence, health and fitness, power, career success, time management, financial planning, life success, relationships, goal setting, leadership, and building character. Your life will magically transform as you turn your conceptualized thoughts into active steps toward achieving your goals. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program is one of the most comprehensive, powerful self-development programs to date and is designed to fit your goals, dreams, and desires, both personally and professionally. Act now, today, and call in to receive further information and your free personal success profile with one of our trained personal development representatives. Designed with Brian Tracy, this profile will identify your strengths and pinpoint your growth opportunities. We offer this analysis to you at no cost and no obligation, so don't delay. To register for this outstanding coaching program or to receive your free personal success profile, call Nightingale Conet now at this number, 1-877-297-9799. That's 1-877-297-9799 and ask for Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Profile. It's one phone call that could change your life.